Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Back in 1980, 70% of clothing worn by Americans was made by Americans. Today, it's 2%. And the reason is simple. It's cheaper to make things overseas. But that doesn't change the fact that 2% of textile manufacturers have refused to give up on this country. And those companies deserve to be congratulated. I'm talking about companies like American Giant. American Giant controls every link in their supply chain, and that matters because when you buy from American Giant, you create jobs for people in factory towns all across this country. Look, I get it. Nobody wants a lecture. But if you want to see more companies make more things in this country, you got to support the companies who are already doing that very thing. This holiday, check out the clothing at American-Giant.com. Flannels, hoodies, t-shirts, and jeans made to last a lifetime. Support the 2% who are still making it here at American-Giant.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for this week's episode of Friday Morning GM with co-host Vas Larikos. Vas, how you doing?
Pretty well, Ken. Really looking forward to this rivalry showdown on Saturday, an Island game, potentially with the division on the line against the Ravens' arch nemesis, the Steelers. This is the type of game that we follow the team all year round, waiting for these kind of matchups, so really cannot wait to see how it unfolds. And I will say I'm cautiously optimistic.
It's a big one. I'd love to be as optimistic, but so we did get some decent news today on a couple of fronts. So we'll talk about that as we go through this show. Interesting that the betting markets seem to have a little bit of a discontinuity with some other things that are going on. And let me explain this, because people may have seen by DVOA, defensive value over adjusted, defensive value over average. The Ravens are the number one team by that ranking. It's done on FTN. Aaron Schatz originated the thing. And they, according to their playoff win probability model, the Ravens have a 36.9% chance to win the AFC North. Virtually sure to be in the playoffs, only about a 0.2% chance of missing it at this point. But 36.9% to win the AFC North in the home game that goes with that in the playoffs. Now, interestingly, despite that, the Ravens are a 77% chance to win that game versus Pittsburgh. So 77 is the first event, leads you to 39 is the way to think of that for DVOA. Now, gambling markets look at the problem very differently. And I looked at Odds Checker and I checked what the probabilities of these events were. The Ravens are 72.2% to win this game versus Pittsburgh. And then that uses the implied odds. I've talked about that before on various shows. So I think if you're interested, you probably know already how I calculate it, but it takes the vig out of those games, 72.2% chance to win the game. And yet they're 40.4% chance to win the AFC North, according to the gamblers. So those numbers seem to be in contradiction to each other.
Yeah, I certainly can understand where the gambling markets give Pittsburgh a little bit of a better chance than the Ravens. Because Pittsburgh's a public team, and they play grinded-out style games where you wouldn't necessarily expect the Ravens to cover a large spread. Interestingly enough, I was talking to my business partner earlier today, and his analytics site that he trusts the most values the Ravens should be an 8-point favorite on a neutral field against Pittsburgh at this point. So even that 6.5 isn't quite representative of where the underlying metrics lie. But the really odd thing is, why would you have a lesser chance for the team to win this game, which is a crucial game, but then have a greater chance to win the division? That's something. Maybe they're looking at the long-term schedule and thinking, well, Mahomes, apparently that ankle injury is not too severe, and maybe they're expecting Pittsburgh to catch an L on Christmas. But that is very odd and just doesn't make paradoxical almost.
Yeah, it what you're saying could be true. And by the way, I talked to Aaron Schatz about this exactly today because he you know, we were befuddled by it. And he thought that maybe it was a case of the other games. And I'm like, well, that's a pretty big difference in win probability for this game to be overcome then by win probabilities in other games. I mean, just it does not seem likely that that's right. I think, you know, that, first of all, the gambling markets don't have this. They're not built on a simulation, or at least they're not working through directly from a simulation in terms of to figure out the math. So I trust Schatz's model more than I do the gambling market has severed right. And I asked the question if there might be a bet for value in there somewhere in gambling markets based on how the thing is priced.
I think the important distinction is that gambling markets are not trying to peg the game accurately necessarily. They're trying to get equal action on both sides and collect the juice. So that's maybe where, but I agree with you. I do trust the analytics. And on the topic of Aaron Schatz, just like to weave in an interesting statistic I saw this week. Aaron came up with a late and close metric, also potentially you could call it clutch. Game is within 8 points in the second half or overtime. The Ravens rank second in EPA in the league on offense. However, they're the worst on the defense. And probably that's a product of the two shootouts with Cincinnati. I think that probably has a large impact on that. But I thought that was a pretty interesting, trend.
It's their losses as well. They when the Ravens lose, they lose close. When the Ravens win, they can win by a lot. So they certainly have that characteristic. I thought the Steelers were in that setup as well. That the Steelers were also good and bad on defense, or maybe it was another team I'm thinking of. But anyway, whatever the case.
I think it might have been the Chargers were the only team that was better than the Ravens, but I could have that wrong. Not looking at it at the moment. Sorry.
Okay. Very good. Anyway, let's move on. Talk a little bit about Deontay Johnson, mutually excused from team activities for this week. And oh, we miss him. has he played his last snap as a Raven?
I think most likely it seems that the team is going to keep him under team control to prevent another team from scooping him up and having to face him maybe. And I guess there's some compensatory offset potential there. Probably not very much at this point. But I would imagine that unless there's a rash of injuries at receiver, which is possible, but barring that, I think his time in purple and black is done.
Now, you'll get to the injury report in a little bit, and we want to get into some detail, but there is some clouds over the possibility of Bateman even playing on this Saturday, which I think, by the way, it's too late for Johnson to, you know, who hasn't practiced this week, to jump in a game against the Steelers.
Right.
And also the possibility that Aguilar will not be cleared from the concussion protocol in time.
Yes. So, you know, that could be the situation where he's forced into action. But it just doesn't seem that Deontay has made the correct amends to get back in the good graces. And I don't blame the team. As I mentioned last week, I do not blame Harbaugh for playing hardball in this situation. A player refuses to go into the game. He's paid to play the game. If he refuses to go in, you throw the book at him as far as I'm concerned.
I'm the same way. I understand he wants a new contract, but he's acting like a spoiled baby, and it's not going to help him with a new contract. That's for sure. So I kind of had hoped his agent or somebody would talk some sense into him, but it doesn't seem like that's occurred at this point. And it may be beyond repair anyway. Maybe the kind of thing that Harbaugh says, look, I'm not taking another chance on this fool. We're going to let him walk. You know, another name in terms of the receiver market that's being mentioned to the Ravens is OBJ.
Yes, OBJ was released by Miami to give him the opportunity to latch on with a contender. Miami's out of the race. OBJ had very sparse production for the Dolphins this year. I would be interested in kicking the tires on OBJ and seeing if he is amenable to more of a backup role as a ring chaser. He does have the one ring that he earned with the Rams, so maybe he's not quite as motivated to get that Super Bowl win that he hasn't, you know, he has one. But I thought last year, although he was overpaid, he was a very efficient receiver for the Ravens and brought some leadership. And considering that there are some injuries now, I think he could be, I'd certainly prefer him to Deontay Johnson and to Tylan Wallace if it comes to that.
All right, I prefer him to Johnson. I'll openly say that he's been very bad this year, and I don't think that can be overstated enough because Tua has had a good year. He's got a passer rating of 107 or thereabout, and OBJ has had terrible stats as, you know, effectively a subset of that, and he had some time with Huntley as well, so it's not exclusively him. But OBJ is at 3.1 yards per target. I think 1 out of 5 on contested catches. 0 missed tackles forced. I mean, just he doesn't have a good stat. Every statistic across the board is bad. And there's always people who want to poo-poo that. And I'll just tell you, it doesn't generally work that way for older receivers. If you find a guy who's bad and old, that's probably bad and done when you get that. And at least before, he'd been out of football for a year and he'd been hurt, and he really hadn't been terrible before that. His last play, he'd actually been good playing for the Rams in the playoffs. The other guys who've moved around late in their career like this, it hasn't worked out as well.
It's been a down year for all of Miami's receivers. Jalen Waddle certainly has not produced as expected coming into the year. And Tyreek Hill has had his moments, but he's not been up to par. What's really driving Tua's just a lot of low yards per target and really peppering Johnny Smith, the old Tennessee Titans tight end, with targets. But again, we're talking about a depth piece here. Not a starter, not a guy that's going to overtake the top two. So I would be interested in that move. And I think there's another potential release from Miami that also may be able to help the Ravens.
Yeah, I'm probably more interested in this one. I mean, honestly, I think OBJ is released. You characterize it as because Miami's out of the race. Well, they're not releasing Calais Campbell because they don't consider themselves out of the race yet. So that tells you it's OBJ, they're releasing because he's bad. But in the case of Calais Campbell, he hasn't yet been released. It has been discussed. Miami will have to be eliminated this weekend, I think is how they're terming it. They still have a slim chance to stay in the race. I think about a 2% chance or thereabouts to make the playoffs. Maybe it's 4, but it's a low single-digit number. The problem is that if Campbell becomes available, there will be suitors. And one of them will be the Detroit Lions, who has a whole lot of problems on the defensive line with the loss of Alen McNeil.
Yes, the Lions' defense has been decimated. I don't necessarily consider them frontrunner for the NFC at this point. I think the Eagles and maybe even the Vikings or the Packers can get in that mix now. But, I'd be more than happy to bring Calais back. Do the Ravens need a 6th defensive lineman? No. Do they need it? No. But is it a nice luxury to have the ability to rotate through 6 guys, and Calais does still have some juice. I've watched him play this year. He is getting after the quarterback and, you know, evading blocks. And so that would be another reunion where we're talking cheap. I think you mentioned last week, a lot of times these kind of players latch on with the Chiefs to try to get the Super Bowl ring. So the more ammunition or potential talent that the Ravens can assemble, the better. They've already had both of these guys in the locker room, OBJ and Calais. They both seem to work out well in the locker room. They have familiarity with the castle, and I welcome both of them with open arms.
Campbell, in particular, what you'd essentially probably be doing is activating 5 defensive linemen, keeping Urban shelved on an inactive list, but you'd still keep him on the 53. I don't think you'd release him. Now, they might do it and try and get him back and whatnot. I just think that opens the door for somebody else to sign Brett Urban. I wouldn't be real excited about that. It's not the end of the world, but I just wouldn't be real excited about it. I'd rather keep 6 on the roster, activate 5 on game day, and kind of make sure you're set through the playoffs with having a 5 deep instead of having to convert to 4 with a who's my 5th situation looking. And they haven't done very well with that, with Wormley and Tupo, you know, stepping in as backups.
It can be a rotational position. So, you know, you could assemble a front that rivals the very best, whether it's the Eagles or the Steelers, whoever you want to say. You know, that's a really nice advantage to take into the postseason and potentially compensate for other deficiencies elsewhere on the defense. But I think we're ready to dive into the injury report, Ken.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
So we have the Thursday report. We have 2 players ruled out already. Deontay Johnson, obviously, for personal issues, as well as Jalen Armour Davis with a hamstring, has not practiced all week. He just could not seem to stay healthy. 4 players are questionable, beginning with Nelson Agholor, has not practiced all week with a concussion. Apparently he was going through some heavy calisthenics on the sideline, per Jonah Schaefer, I believe, earlier today. We have Rashad Bateman, probably the headliner of this segment, limited on Wednesday, did not practice on Thursday, was spotted in a walking boot, per Jeff Zeribek. We know he has had foot issues in the past. Daniel Falele has been limited all week with a knee injury, and Odafe Owe has been limited on both Wednesday and Thursday with an ankle. Questionable.
Yeah, so let's start. Owe and Bateman, starters obviously out, are would be a big deal if those come to fruition. Daniel Falele, I guess there's people who probably are out there and real excited about this happening and thinking, well, you know, maybe he'll be forced into playing Ben Cleveland. Maybe John Harbaugh or Monken, whoever you think is responsible for this decision, will be forced into playing Cleveland at right guard. It might not be the worst thing for the Ravens in truth, but it does erode their depth, and it's not something that's a good thing for the year going forward. Don't know the severity of the ankle injury, but it hasn't been it could certainly be something that he goes ahead and plays, or even he's out for 1 week. Wouldn't be the end of the world either. Might be the other possibility. I don't see this as some springboard to an obvious switch to Cleveland, even if he were to play and play fairly well. Like if he were to play and grade out, say, a B by my system, I don't think it necessarily means he takes a job away from Falele. Although that is exactly what happened on the left side with McCary replacing the injured Voorhees. So.
How did you grade Falele last week? I missed that. I didn't quite have a chance to see that.
I'll roll through his recent grades here just as we do that. Obviously hasn't been very good, but he's the last... Yeah, see, he got an A in week 6 against Washington. Since then, F, D, C, D, D, C minus D, D. Not particularly good. Probably overall right now, he's at 0.72 for the year. There would be an adjustment on that, and that's below. So I would think he'd be right around a D for the entire year right now, given what he's done. He's only actually failed twice, and the 2 failures he've had hadn't been way falling off the table failures. So that's a positive. But he's just had too many games in the D range, and the aggregation of his negative results. If we were looking at old reds and greens from PFFs, we would have seen a lot more red games.
Just the eye test without grading it the way you do, it looked like he had a couple highlight blocks, maybe more than usual last week, but also didn't quite have the consistency we're looking for. I think we'll circle back to Falele once we get to the mailbag portion of this episode. Mm-hmm. But to me, back to Bateman, I think that's it's something to certainly monitor, something concerning, something puts a damper on my outlook for this game. Coming off his best games of career, perhaps the best game of his career last week. And I would opine that the improvement from Bateman has been the number one driving factor as far as the overall offensive improvement from last year to this year. I think even more than Derrick Henry. I have some statistics that I'll...
Other than Lamar, maybe. You're saying...
I'm saying that, well, the... Sure. So Lamar has improved, and I think Bateman has helped facilitate that.
Sure.
Okay. More than others. He really has had a breakout year. So just put a couple statistics on it. And this is a week old statistic, but this was EPA, the Ravens rushing offense on early downs had both a better success rate and EPA per play in 2023 than they have had so far in 2024. So to me, that says Derrick Henry's been great. He has breakaway ability. He has the ability to finish the games. But the driving force, I think, has been better pass-catching ability.
Right. And we've still seen a couple of big drops. Obviously, Bateman's left some yards on the field like a lot of people have. In this last week, it was a couple of big throws that were off target to Bateman. Even though Lamar was 21 out of 25, you know, Bateman deep down the middle was way underthrown. And Bateman on the right side was another one that probably would have been 10 more yards had he had it. Even with that, Bateman is now at 10.9 yards per target. That's the second, with the season ended today, it's the second highest in Ravens history to Andrews' rookie year. He's got a shot at that record. It's 11.04 is the record, and Bateman's exactly at 10.9. So he'd have to catch a couple deep balls the rest of the way, and there's a reasonable chance for him to get to it. I want to move on to another player before we go to the Steelers.
Yeah.
Obviously, Rasheen Ali in the game at the Meadowlands over Keaton Mitchell, and Mitchell was a healthy scratch. Neither Mitchell nor Ali on the injury report this week. So the question is, who gets that RB3 spot this week? Do you give it to Ali with the possibility of some special teams contributions, because both of them can return kicks and have? Or do you give it to Mitchell, you know, with the thinking being that you held him out against the Giants, possibly because of the Met Stadium turf?
Okay. So I believe that Mitchell has now had 3 weeks rest because he was deactivated before the bye week, then had the bye week, then had the game last week. We don't know what his injury prognosis is, but it seems to me, and especially maybe with a hard-hitting game on tap, and I think Ali has shown some good signs as a return man, I'd probably lean Ali. Certainly, I'm bullish on Mitchell long term, but it was a tough knee injury, and sometimes it takes time, as I think we mentioned, the scar tissue potential, etc.
So there could be some scar tissue carrying a piano kind of look that they're seeing in practice that they don't like, but and we wouldn't really know because I don't think that should show up on the injury report. But he's not on the injury report. And, you know, if we're talking about, you know, Keaton Mitchell at 437 versus Ali, you know, in any constitution of the world, I'm much more excited about, you know, Mitchell in terms of how he can help this team. I also think you put him out there in that Steelers game where I'm not even sure he's faced the Steelers. I don't think he's ever faced the Steelers because he's injured at the end of last year. But you'd have a possibility to stick him in there and all of a sudden have some real thought-provoking decisions have to be made or dilemmas forced upon the Steelers defensive coordinator.
Yeah, hope so. Another just side note that just popped into my brain. I believe Lamar has only played the Steelers at home once in his career. Yep. This will be his second time.
Yeah, I think it might have been in 20, you know, when they had the empty stadium for COVID.
Yep.
Another guy.
So he hasn't had a chance to make those memories, the rivalry memories with his home crowd behind him. But anyway, sorry.
Oh, let's hope. Let's hope this is the game. Michael Pierce back, played very well against the Giants in 20 snaps. He was one of my kind of star players that I looked at in terms of the individual plays and the defensive piece. They only had 2.0 yards per play with Pierce in the game, which is really nice to when that sort of thing happens. Gives the Ravens a completely new look on the defensive line in terms of having two big men healthy. That means they get one every play. And kind of more importantly, I think this is lost on a lot of people, is that everybody goes back to playing their normal position. So Broderick Washington doesn't have to play nose tackle where he's undersized to do it. He can go back to playing that 3-5 mix. You know, Brent Urban doesn't have to play as much 3 when he's on the field, say with Broderick Washington as a B pairing that they were having for a while. You know, everybody basically gets to play the downs they're supposed to. And I think the other thing you probably get out of it is you probably get a little bit lower snap count out of Matabike, which I think has to help the Ravens at this point.
Great point. Domino effect from adding Pierce back. He looked strong. He looked quick, moving around pretty well, you know, getting sideline to sideline in some plays. Didn't looks like he's carrying more weight, but somehow able to keep it moving. So great addition. I think that they have a Super Bowl caliber defensive line. So yeah. we'll see how that where that takes them.
You're absolutely right about the weight, man. That just looked otherworldly. the kind of the slowest pressure of all time, as Washington is actually on the left side as the quarterback is facing, is shutting off a screen pass. The quarterback has no way to go, and he has all this time to think about Pierce hitting him as he's kind of almost walking towards him.
Yeah.
All right. TJ Tampa, window ends today to reactivate him to the lineup. I'm actually really interested. Did you hear?
Yep, he was activated about an hour ago. Yep, so he satisfies that he's the 53rd man.
Well, that's
which makes sense with Jay.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With JAD out as well, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. So that's great. A kind of a great December injury report that's a little bit worse with these OA and Bateman injuries. On the other side, though, the Steelers have their own injuries in this game.
They sure do. And apparently TJ Watt was rumored to be questionable, no designation on his report. However, their number one receiver and certainly their best pass catcher, George Pickens, has already been ruled out. And you mentioned to me in the pre-production, with Deshaun Elliott, who's having a very good year for the Steelers, is also out. So that bodes well, certainly.
Yeah, the Steelers secondary, Deshaun Elliott is the guy who runs around and makes plays. And frankly, you know, the Ravens have Roquan Smith to help clean up missed tackles from other players. The Steelers have Deshaun Elliott. He's only missed two tackles all year. He's 28 stops, which is an unbelievable ratio. Never seen anything like it. Even from an inside linebacker, never seen anything like it. And then you've got Patrick Queen, whose ratio is under 2-1, sitting there at stops to miss tackles in the middle. So Elliott's a very important player for him. And I think he takes away routes to, he's not a pure free safety. He's a strong safety to be sure, but they've got Minka for the back end. Steelers honestly have a lot of problems on the back end in terms of the ability to cover from their corners. They get a ton of penalties. I think the Ravens have a lot. Humphrey has 10 and Wiggins has 8, but Joey Porter has 15 penalties this year.
Yeah.
And
grabby.
Yep.
And very grabby.
Minka has allowed 11.1 yards per target. So that is up in the Eddie Jackson range in terms of being bad. So we're, it's a team that I think you can throw the football against. Somebody told me a weather report that there's a fair amount of wind expected for Saturday, which would not be good for the Ravens. They definitely want the passing game to be open, particularly with Pickens out.
Well, windy game and no Deshaun Elliott to me says game plan should be get Isaiah Likely the ball in space and see what kind of yards after the catch he can produce.
Love it. Yeah, taking away their best tackler from the Steelers are a good tackling team. The Ravens are a good tackling team. Very close in that regard. Both teams force a lot of missed tackles, but you take Deshaun Elliott out of this equation, that changes things dramatically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Certainly.
All right. Let's move on a little bit. So if they're adding Tampa on Saturday, so they added him to the roster. They have a corresponding move or they have an open spot already?
They had one last one open.
Okay. Incredible. They haven't really been forced to any tough decisions. The Ravens, obviously not with a lot of walking wounded on the roster. At some point, Christian Welch is probably expendable. I would think he's the top one to be cut at this point. Although some of the other ones that I had on the list, like Tez Walker going to IR, that ain't happening now.
Absolutely not. Got that slot fade touchdown and with the receiver core banged up as it is, who knows if Aguilar is going to clear protocol in time and who knows if Bateman's going to need a little time to rest that foot. Tez Walker, certainly not. I certainly agree with you. Christian Welch would be the guy to be demoted. And if not him, Sanusi Kane to IR, special teams only coverage players are not where I want to invest the final few game day jerseys.
Right. Desmond King, I guess, could be somewhere down the line, but with a loss of a corner, you're probably going to keep Desmond King around to play some slot, keep Humphrey on the outside if you're forced into that or if you think you're forced into that. So a few things. I guess Bo Braid also would be a risk.
King had a decent return, I think, on that punt. I'm not sure where he factors in as far as the cornerback safety depth chart. But, use those activations as you can. And once you get to the postseason, I believe it's unlimited activations. So as far as practice squad elevations, I should say, not activations, elevations. So, take your strongest 48 into every game.
Is it still two per game, but unlimited additional, like you don't have to live with just three, but it's still two per game?
That's how I understand it. It's two per game, but you can activate them for, all four games. You make it to the Super Bowl without there's not a maximum of three total. It resets. Okay. It resets as well.
I guess people would be crazy. If you're a practice squad player and you leave a Super Bowl team where you're getting activated, that would be just crazy thing to do, but yeah. There's probably somebody.
Where are you going to go?
Yeah.
You're going to go to a team that's already gone fishing? I don't know.
Yeah, that's it. You hear about mercenary players in the NFL who say, why do I want to play playoff games? Just extra games they're not paying me for. And that's the guy you do not want as a teammate, I can tell you that.
No kidding. Get me the most competitive guys you can find. That's how you win Super Bowls.
All right, let's hit the mailbag. And if you didn't see Voss's poll question earlier, I hope you gave that a shot anyway. But we'll start with Kid Rock 20, who says, why do the Ravens insist on pulling Falele on run and pass plays? He's too big and lumbering to line up blocks on pulls. Am I wrong? It feels like they treat him like any ordinary guard and not a 6'8 mammoth. Completely agree on that. By the way, they're asking Daniel Falele to do a lot of things that he can't do well, and he gave up a half and a third of a sack on pulls, which I don't think I've ever seen in the same game. And that led to a big negative one on six pulls, which was a lot of his negative score this last week. So I would agree with that completely.
I would as well. A square peg round hole sort of situation there. I do like when they pull on passing plays to offer that element of deception, but mm-hmm. not necessarily with Falele.
Right. Yeah, it's like trying to play with one hand tied behind your back. It's I guess there's a lot of metaphors we could use. Got another one here from Evan. Similar. Why are the Ravens willing to make major personnel changes on defense to improve? I think he's talking about the safeties, but nothing on the offensive line.
I mean, I think you always have to come back to continuity breed success on the offensive line. I think you could probably make that case as well in the secondary. But the Ravens have the number one offense in the league. So you weren't in a desperation mode as they were in the secondary when they decided to take Hamilton and Ardarius and make them both full-time safeties.
Right. They were out of choices there, I think. And they're, you know, the nice thing about the offensive line, even if you don't like, you know, the players in there, and a lot of people have expressed a frustration with Fa'alele, some with McCary. I think that's a lot less founded. He had a really good game this last week. But they've been a high continuity line, and that has been part of what's made them pretty good for this year. They're not a great line. They're a middle-of-the-pack line, probably, you know, 12th, 14th in the entire NFL. They're probably not in the bottom 18 in the league. And they just had a great game, by the way, coming out against the Giants, or they gave they really provided great pass protection. So, you know, this just it's not like anybody's screaming for changes other than the people on Twitter and you know, the fan base who really doesn't like Fa'alele. And I got to admit, he does not look the part. And so far, he hasn't played the part. My reason for changing it would be largely that I don't think there's a lot of option value left in the hourglass. That you don't have a lot of value left at this point with Fa'alele for year four that you can look forward to. And it probably is time to give Cleveland that opportunity at right guard. But earlier in the year, I was probably more okay with it. You know, I would have been still slightly leaning Cleveland, but the fact that they were going with Fa'alele and he was playing reasonably well was okay. And now he's taking a downturn in terms of his play, and I'm less sanguine with it.
Yeah, and to counter my own point that I made earlier, continuity, 2012 Ravens, right? Changed three positions on the O-line, went on to win the Super Bowl. So
there you go.
I'm in favor of Cleveland, but it's going to be a tough offseason if there's a crucial play and Fa'alele is in there and he's the reason that Lamar's pressured or throws a pick or something like that in the postseason. But hopefully we don't get to that point. And I think Lamar is a little bit of a different quarterback to play with than most, where you need game reps and experience with him to sort of get the feeling of where you should be, how you should hand off, and how you should prepare. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. Fingers crossed.
All right. A-Bits says, with two safeties inactive yesterday, the Ravens had one of their better special teams pass defense games of the year. What are your thoughts with colder weather this month and next on the Ravens activating fewer safeties and more linebackers / DL? Okay, great question. Really thought out well here. You know, I'm always like to have one more than you need at the position group at a minimum. So if you want to play any dime, if you want to get Hamilton into the slot, then you need an extra. If you want to get Hamilton to the slot, you need two extra safeties. You need to have four on the roster. And if you're going to play just the regular two safety rotation, you can do it with three. And they've now kind of tipped their hand that Brandon Stevens would be the guy they'd put on the back end as the first man up, as opposed to Desmond King or Braid or Kane or anybody else. It's Brandon Stevens. And I think that actually bodes kind of well for how the Ravens would match up against the Steelers wide receivers, that it would potentially put Wiggins over there at right corner, potentially on an island against somebody who's a fairly fast receiver, or it could have been Pickens. It's not going to be Pickens. I thought he'd have been a great matchup, much better than Stevens.
Yeah, when I saw the game day designations and Marcus Williams was inactive, I was a little concerned of what is the depth and safety. Hopefully that decision didn't bite them. Stevens, I thought, you know, he's a capable backup there. As far as the specific question, I think more linebackers and defensive linemen makes more sense now that the players are not running down the field on kickoffs, because you don't necessarily need the speed. But by and large, I would like to not overdo it with, again, special teams only players. Have a, as you said, a player on the bench that can jump in there and make some plays when necessary.
Surplus of one. Let me ask you, from a risk management perspective, would you rather have a sixth defensive lineman? I always say you got to play five, not four, but would you rather have a sixth defensive lineman than that extra special teams player in a postseason game, where that, you know, certifiably can lose you a game all by itself if you get, you know, if you have two injuries there, certainly, or even if you have one?
I really do. I mean, I think sometimes in the Harbaugh era, these term of special teams aces has and the fondness for them and the fan base has gone too far, and the drop off from a quote unquote special teams ace to just anybody you're sticking in there is not very much.
With you on that. Okay, let's go to another one. This one kind of have a question about the account. I always look at how many followers somebody has. If they have, you know, 30 followers, they're in that gray zone of do they really post a lot? Do it. But this is from catfish. So nothing suspicious here. Hey Ken, I would be very interested in your perspective on the pervasive fan discontent and negativity. All I see are endless complaints, such as Cade Mitchell usage, Tez Walker usage, number of special teams players activated, often things of no consequence. Okay. I mean, I think we just covered the last one there here, is that we are actually, I think it's important to activate the number of defensive linemen that you need to have as opposed to the number of special teams players. I think the defensive lineman is a significant concern and right. The number of special teams players isn't. But you would be right in the sense that five versus four or six versus five is a relatively of minor consequence relative to is Lamar playing or not, or is Rashad Bateman playing or not. So mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, or, you know, even do the Ravens not go for it on fourth and one? That is a very significant mm-hmm. mistake from this last game unfortunately, a lot of good things can happen and you make a mistake like that. That's pretty bad. But how about the other two? How about Tez Walker and Keaton Mitchell specifically?
You know, fan how you want to fan is my opinion. If you're sitting there and you just sign off on everything the Ravens do and that's what you like to do, go for it. If you want to analyze it and come up with your own thought process and opinions on what you think could happen, that's part of the fun of following a team in my view. You know, I understand why some fans are frustrated. I think that the Ravens have had one of the better regular season teams for most of Lamar's tenure and have not cashed it in with the Super Bowl appearance even. So I understand that, but I also think that I'm personally enjoying this season very much. I enjoyed last season. I enjoyed most of the season. So fin how you want a fan, I just let's not get too confident that we know what's best, especially for players like Keaton Mitchell, where we don't know the injury issues, or Tez Walker, where we don't know his grasp of the playbook, et cetera.
Okay. I'm with you on all that. I think that's a good way to put it. And I'm all for letting people want what they want, and that includes all the people who want to see OBJ back in Baltimore or want to see the Ravens give Deontay Johnson a second chance. You be your own fan. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do the same thing and say in no uncertain terms what I want in the situation. And you know what? It doesn't make you an idiot, and I hope you don't think it makes me an idiot either.
Yeah.
It's just the way people want. Yeah.
Respectful debate. Yep.
There you go. Last question from the mailbag is from Harrison Kunkel. He says, if the Dolphins are to release Calais Campbell and he was to pass through waivers, would it make sense for the Ravens to sign him for a postseason run? Additionally, do you think the Ravens would be more incentivized to keep five defensive linemen active moving forward? I'll answer the second part. Then I think we've talked about Campbell a little bit, but any of the thoughts would be good. I think they're already highly incented to keep five defensive linemen active right now. And I don't know what I can say to make them more incentivized other than to look back at the past and say, this has not worked out this year when they've activated four and some of the injury issues they've had at the position. And even sometimes when they've activated 4.1 because Travis Jones is available in theory, but he's not really healthy enough to play. So I'm very much in favor of make sure you have enough defensive linemen.
100%. And this time of year, especially, this is a time of year where the running game wins and loses games more than when the weather's warmer. I think that's maybe anecdotal, but you see it every year where this time of year, a third string back, first string back's hurt, and somebody comes out of nowhere and puts the team on his back and carries them to victory. So at least five, and I'd be okay with six, and I'd sacrifice a special teams guy for the six as well. If you have six quality guys you can rotate through that are making an impact in the game.
Give me a level of excitement for a signing of Calais Campbell with a one being Ravens sign an additional special teams player to fill in, and a 10 being I don't even know what their greatest they trade for Marcus Peters, let's say, as a 10.
Yeah, I'd give it a solid seven. Solid seven. I mean, he didn't quite have the juice he used to, but he still has something to think.
Same place exactly for me. Just the number I was thinking of. You had a poll question, right?
Yeah. So I did a little poll on Twitter X and just wanted to get your thought, Ken. Basically, I phrased it as if the Ravens cap situation forces them to move on from one player from this current roster this offseason, would you prefer Ronnie Stanley, Marlon Humphrey, Derrick Henry, or Mark Andrews? And I have the results I'll share with you once we get your take, okay. And also what the cap savings would be, whatever the cap projects their value to be, et cetera. But interested to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's a very tough question. That's a very tough question. Andrews is the guy that I would have in the number one spot among the four. I think that's pretty clear to me. I think I would have Henry maybe third in that group, Humphrey fourth, and Stanley second, I think. And I don't really – my only reason for putting Stanley as high as number two is certainly the scarcity is such that they're going to have a very hard time replacing him. But I think that he's not played quite at the same level these last few weeks, so I'm a little concerned about that. But how did the poll come out?
So, interestingly enough, and I was surprised by this, 34% voted for Ronnie Stanley, 31% for Derrick Henry, 23% for Mark Andrews, and only 12% for Marlon Humphrey. I agree with Marlon being the one I'd most like to keep. His play is valued at $14.8 million this year on over the cap. Potential cap savings will be $12.4 million. I do think Mark makes the most sense. There's a potential for $11 million in savings, and his play has been valued at $8.6 million. But I was surprised by Ronnie. I guess, you know, the scarcity of the position is not acknowledged by some. But, that's where I would be.
We just did a Mark Andrews retrospective that is actually not going to post until Sunday, I think, after the game. So it'll be the first, you know, thing that's out after the game on filmstudybaltimore.com. Want to be very respectful of everything he's done for the Ravens. And part of the reason that Mark Andrews is the most expendable is they happen to have two other tight ends whose contracts come up exactly the same time in Likely and Kohler. And they have to make decisions about those. They're going to be tough, heartbreaking decisions. And I think they're also probably going to have to go back to the draft this coming year to just stagger where those tight ends are. So hopefully, you know, this is a group. Maybe they get lucky. Maybe Kadir Ishmael is a real talent if he can stay healthy next year. But I think they're probably going to have to go back to the draft.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a chance that the Ravens could keep all four. They can move money around. There's a lot of different levers they could pull. I personally don't think, after watching this franchise for 20-some years, that they want to extend themselves to that extent. Mm-hmm. And I think Derrick Henry, how he finishes the year, was probably as good of a year as he has had. And he's valued at $13.5 million for over the cap. The potential savings is only $7 million. But I think if he does not close the year strong, he might be a place where they can save a little coin as well.
I think there is some sort of a kicker he gets in his contract for incentives met that applies both to this year and to next year that might bump him up by another couple million dollars. So it's a legitimate question. And, you know, it's been just so much fun having Derrick Henry here. I had not bought in at the beginning of the year to everything he's done, but he's been 130% of what was hoped for, even with a little bit of decline in terms of statistically what's happened since. I'm personally very happy that he hasn't made a run at 2,000 yards. I think that could have actually been not only a distraction for the Ravens, it could have forced some overuse of him in a way I think would have been very unhealthy for the team. So I'm happy with the way it's worked out. I think the meshing with him and Hill is good. I'd like to see it be him, Hill, and Mitchell next year.
I agree. So we'll see how it plays out. But Ronnie Stanley's shaping up to be the marquee unrestricted free agent big decision to make coming up in the spring.
All right, Voss, always a pleasure doing this show with you. Tell folks where they can find your work online or talk to you if they have a football question.
Ken, my pleasure as always. I am on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA. And I always enjoy talking Ravens ball. Starting to get a little bit of a contrarian, optimistic feeling about this year, but we shall see.
All right. Very good. There's finally, I think I hear some people coming out of the woodwork to say, they really believe. I hope not those people don't all come out after the Steelers game, because that would just be a little frustrating, obviously, to do that. I'm very bullish on the Ravens and their chance to do damage. I don't think there's any team out there who wants to face the Ravens. I don't think there's one blessed NFL team that's thinking, yeah, you know what? Bring the Baltimore Ravens to our house. That's one of the teams we want to take care of right here. Yeah.
No, right. They're sitting well. Just, they've just got to continue executing on defense and making splash plays on offense. And that's the elixir for the postseason.
All right. Thanks so much for everybody who's adding to hashtag film study mailbag. Please keep it up. And let's get some new people in the mix too. I love hearing from some of the same people, love hearing from new people as well. And questions become a pretty big part of this show because there are some really good ones. So we are going to, cut them down. We're not going to do every question, but we'll do questions that we think are meaningful and thoughtful. And that has been the vast majority of them that we've gotten in the mailbox. So really appreciate that. If you otherwise want to do something nice for the show, tell somebody else about it. Like and subscribe if you're listening to the show on YouTube. For Vasilikos, this is Ken McCusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next week on what show is this?
Friday Morning GM.
Friday Morning GM.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.